Okay, Parshas Kisisa begins with some very exciting topics. After this, we'll give the Machatzis Shekel. We read about the responsibility to create a lavera, a kiyor nechoshes. And the question has to be asked, why is the kiyor's command in this week's Parsha instead of in Parshas Truma with the other klei ha-mishkan, with the other utensils of the mishkan? And why is it placed directly between the Parshas Machatzis Shekel, the beginning of the Parsha, which talks about the requirement to give the half-shekel coin, and that of the Ketores? So Shmuel Brazil, Shalita, explained that the style of the hand-washing at the Kiyor, which was the hand-over-foot style, highlights the dual aspect of doing the Avoda. The hand does the Avoda, but the foot is the thing that brings him there. It doesn't matter which part is longer or shorter, both the hand and the foot are significant. Similarly, the Machatzis HaShekel reminds us that no person is complete without being a part of a greater whole, and also at the same time, the Ketores reminds us that even ingredients like the chelbana, which was a foul-smelling ingredient, can become whole and play a role, and without it, leaves the Jewish people in an incomplete state. So the placing of the mitzvah of the kiyor here reminds us that a Jew must believe that he can still have his service count even when he doesn't feel whole, provided that he directs his avoda as part of a nation fully to Hashem. Then, at the end of this section, after the Ketores were told that, behold, I have called Re'e Karasi B'Shem Bitzalel. Now, why doesn't Hashem say that he appointed Bitzalel? What's Re'e Karasi? Why don't you say Manisi is Bitzalel? So, Rav Shachter explained that the Talmud and Brachos learns from here that public positions of authority need appointment and acceptance by the community. That is to say, said Rav Shechter, who quoted Rabbeinu Tam, even if a person was willing to pay to become the Rav or the Parnes HaTzibur, right, the community cannot have any requirements to preserve that position and observe that position unless the individual serving it is Merutza, is acceptable to the Kahal. The fact of the matter is that when the Egel happened, the Jews made a declaration, Eila Elohecha Yisrael, this is your God Israel, Eila Elohecha Asher Hotseisa Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim, the one that took you out of Mitzrayim, Asher Halucha Eretz Mitzrayim, Eila Elohecha Yisrael, Asher Halucha Eretz Mitzrayim, this is your God Israel who took you up from Egypt. And the Medrash comments that in the same way that it was good for our forefathers to receive the Torah and say, Nasa V'nishma, suggests the Medrash, perhaps it was good for them to declare, Eila Elokecha Yisrael. The Medrash adds with the statement, Asmaha, what a strange idea. Why would a Medrash make such a troubling comparison between two seemingly isolated declarations between Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Eila Elokecha Yisrael? So Rav Goldbach Zatzal, the Rosh Yeshiva of Keren Biavne, noted that the connection between them was in Hislavos. My friend in Miami Beach, Donald Bixon, spoke very much about the Hislavos, the inspiration that existed at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. His language, when I heard him speak a couple of weeks ago, was the understanding of euphoria. Now, the comparison between the two stages, between the Egel on the one hand and the euphoria on the other hand, was the same inspiration for the positive that was also the driving force behind the negative. Says Rav Goldbach Zatzal, Hislavos is a great thing when it's harnessed to a solid goal and to a solid focus. But unbridled Hislavos, just emoting, can be destructive and can destroy many futures as well. Moshe turns to Aaron and he says, Ma salacha mazeh ki evesa aleim chata'a gedola. What did this nation do to you that you brought on a terrible sin to them? Now, how could it be that the very same Aaron who was involved in the Egel would later serve as the Kohen Gadol, the one destined to save the people and help them atone for the Egel? So Rebelsky Zatzal explains that based on the Gemara in Yuma and Samach Tes Amid Beis about the fact that Chazal wanted to nullify the Yitzhar for the Avodah Zarah in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah and Zechariah and Navi, suggests Rebelsky the same can be suggested for Aaron HaKohen, who is also seeking to be mevatel the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. However, whereas in the time of Zechariah, Hashem accepted the nullification, he was not ready to cede the power of Nevuah that would need to be traded with the Yetzer for Avodah Zarah. Aaron HaKohen attempted a maneuver that as risky that was risky and ultimately put him in great peril. One so selfless that ultimately led to his own personal destruction, his family lost two children, certainly deserves to be a Kohen for the people. He knows how to put his kids second and put his nation and his responsibility as primary. And the fact of the matter is, Yahushua turns to Moshe when Moshe comes down from the mountain, and he says, "Kol milchama b'machaneh," that there's a sound of a war in the camp. And Moshe answers, "Ain kol anos givura," that there is no kol anos of strength, "Ain kol anos chalusha," there's no statement of kol anos of weakness, just kol anos anochi shomea. So Ramban comments that Moshe was showing Yahushua that one needs not hear the sounds, but rather needs to learn to distinguish between the sounds. Rav Olba Zatzal adds that the leader needs to be able to distinguish between the sounds of war and the sounds of schok, and that was what Moshe was trying to suggest to Yahushua to pay attention to. We once suggested on our own that the sounds of schok, this useless noisiness, comes when it's merely kol anos. We're all responding to responses. I'm responding and you're responding, and I'm responding and you're responding. There's no goal except to respond and to destroy. There's no ultimate common ground in that process, and we need to think about common grounds and when we're trying to solve crises within our lives. Vayishaber saluchos tachasahar. We're told that Moshe Rabbeinu comes and he breaks the luchos. Now the truth is, Moshe Rabbeinu had already heard about the ego from Hashem, and he heard the sounds, and outside of the camp, and still, despite it all, he continued to carry the luchos. So, what was it that led him to smash the luchos when he ultimately did? So, Rav Chaim Sabato Shalita quotes Rav Goldbach Zatzal, quoted Rav Huttner Zatzal, who explain that the difficulty that Moshe had was the thought that they could have the luchos and still revel in the ego. It was the Vayaras HaMecholos, it was the fact that they saw the dancing that showed that the people fully identified with their act. That being the case, Moshe had no choice but to smash the luchos. Because it's the one thing to have to engage in activity that's not consistent with Torah values. But the fact of the matter is that comfort with Avodah Zarah cannot be coupled in any way, shape, or form with the acceptance of the word of Hashem. After the first two aliyos, which deal with the bulk of the parsha, both in terms of quantity and in terms of storyline, that towards that continuation of the parsha, we also once again return to the moados. We're told in regard to the yamim tovim, "V'lo yachmod ish etz artzecha ba'aloscha le'ra'os es p'nei Hashem elokecha." No man will desire your land when you go up to be'ol le'regel. Rameir Shapiro, the Lublina Rav, the Rosh Hashiva of Chachmei Lublin, the famous Polish senator, as well as the Miyaseid, the founder of the Dafyomi movement, pointed out that the vacation of Aliyah Larego was not an appreciation of the physical beauty of the city of Yerushalayim, but rather that opportunity for Aliyah Larego was supposed to be based on its spiritual beauty. And that was the intention of the Torah when the Torah tells us that Lo Yachmod Ish Es Artzecha, no one will desire your land. For after all, everyone wants Yerushalayim. But rather, the intention was by nature, right? They're not going to want the land because of the nature of the land. When the nations of the world all fight over Jerusalem and argue that they want it to be an international city, they're moved by the spiritual nature and the mystique of Yerushalayim. But the Gemara Pesachim tells us that there were no peros ginosar in Yerushalayim. The sweet fruits that grew in the north were not able to be found in Yerushalayim. And the reason for this was so that Aliyah Larego would not be tainted by ulterior motives. People shouldn't say the only reason that they're going to Yerushalayim was to go ahead and enjoy the physical fruits instead of the spiritual experience. Finally, we read one of the more interesting Haftorahs, in that most years we don't get a chance to read this Haftorah. The Haftorah tells the story of the debate of Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel. And in that context, Eliyahu makes the following declaration to the people, "Ad masai atem poskim al shnei ha-se'ifim," how long are you going to pass on two opposing sides? If you're going to side with Hashem, then side with Hashem. And if you're going to go with Baal, so l'chu l'Baal, says Eliyahu, go to Baal. So how could Eliyahu HaNavi suggest that the Jews choose Baal? Isn't the choice of isn't choice one of sending Jews away from Hashem? Isn't Eliyahu as a Navi supposed to encourage people to choose a middle ground? So Rav Pam Zatzal quoted Rav Chaim Soloveitchik Zatzal, who explained that the choice is not a partial one. One cannot have faith in Hashem and Baal at the same time. So when a Jew chooses Baal, a Jew is choosing not Hashem. And as Rav Chaim famously quit, a shtickl apikuris is a complete apikuris. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, you can't have a little of it. You can't be, in that regard, just a little bit of an apikuris. You are or you aren't. And therefore, Eliyahu put it onto the people so that they would realize. Shabbat Shalom to all.